Hello, friends, and welcome to Impact Everywhere, the podcast that looks for people having a positive impact in unexpected places. My name is Benjamin Von Wong, and today we have Allison Teal, also known as the female Indiana Jones. I met Allison through another photographer called Sarah Lee, who does these amazing underwater portraits. I highly recommend you check her out. And we were talking about the intersection of social influence and impact, and she recommended that I talk to Allison because of the activism work that she had done. Allison sort of lives on the intersection of education and entertainment, influencer and adventurer, and she's traveled around the world with an iconic pink surfboard, documenting her journey, sharing it on all these different social media platforms along the way. And although she first set out to be quote unquote just an adventurer, she soon became an environmental activist because of what she kept discovering. More on that in the podcast. One of my favorite projects of hers involved going all the way to Trash Island in the Maldives with her pink surfboard and literally surfing this mountain of trash, raising awareness to the point where the government of Maldives actually decided to clean up the whole island. So I just wanted to bring her onto this podcast to ask her about her life, how she approaches the world, how she thinks about change, and also a little bit how she makes a living, especially in this time of COVID. When I reached out to her, she was really excited because she had just closed this amazing book deal with Ripley's, believe it or not, called Travel the World with Allison's Adventures. And it turns out the reason that she ended up with this book deal was sort of thanks to an introduction that I had made a couple of years prior. More on that later in the podcast. And I didn't even know about it. So anyways, I'll let Allison do the rest of the talking. This is Allison Teal, and here she is talking about how she got her social media debut.
When I'd be traveling, I wasn't trying to become a social media star. I just wanted to share my stories with the world, and I didn't have a network or a Discovery Channel at that point or any of these avenues. So I just started posting things, and organically people would start following. And a lot of the time I'd get what I call eat, pray, love demographic of those people who wanted to break out of their shells and maybe more adventure. You'd get the spring break tribe crowd of like, where do I travel? Or you'd get the photography, the techie, the millennials. So originally, I just had to flow with the times and go, maybe my dream to inspire kids, even though I was going to schools and doing as many school tours as I could do, you can't impact as many kids as you want across social media until things like TikTok or things have been popping up. And my initial plan was I wanted to show the mystery, the intrigue, these cultures that I had grown up in, right?
Like Indiana Jones.
Like Indiana Jones, right? Exactly like Indiana Jones, but with more of a girly take. I wanted to show, especially young girls, that you can be in pink and you can be feminine. You can go out there and you can still solve the mystery and ride a big wave or jump off a cliff or a bungee jump or whatever. Actually, I don't really like bungee. You can climb tall trees. You can do epic things. And along the way, the number one thing that I found, no matter what I was searching for, was plastic. And so I started to shift my quest to not just a female Indiana Jones uncovering mysteries and legends and stories, but also on a quest to basically save our most valuable treasure on Earth, which I discovered is our world waters.
And also, like with this book, you're still combining the two, right? Like you seem to do this like pretty consistently where you mix sustainability with entertainment. Is that still staying true in the book?
100%. Yeah. Education through entertainment is everything. I don't know about when you were little, because you're like this innate, amazing anomaly where you probably wanted to learn the day you were born. But I feel like when I was little, I didn't want to learn. Who wants to learn? You want to play. You want to hear mystery stories. I used to tell my dad, tell me the big scary shark story again. And he'd have to make up a whole nother one. And as we'd be adventuring through these jungles, or literally, they were like, when I was seven, they're like, okay, let's go climb Mount Everest. And I was little and I was trying to hike 10-mile days, 20-mile days in snowstorms and all these things. And so he would start telling me stories. That was the way, you know, oh, right around the bend, there's going to be a Yeti. And so that would literally keep me going, was these stories. But the funny part was, is that I'd actually find the Yeti, or I'd actually accomplish this thing, because to me, they weren't just a story. It became a reality. But what I started noticing over those times is that these stories that were passed on by ancient cultures actually had value. Like we were talking about how we can look to history for important lessons right now. We can look to these chiefs, to these shamans. when they tell a story around a campfire or through shadow puppets in Indonesia, they're not just, yeah, there was this magical eel and then this demon. And then, and it's not just for fun or for shock value or for entertainment or to scare kids. It has a purpose where if you don't learn this story, you won't learn how to plant your rice crops the right way. If those rice crops don't go in, you don't survive. And so to me, storytelling became the way to share information. And it had to be exciting. It had to be fun. And originally, I wasn't even in my stories. I just went out to document it with my camera. And then people didn't want to talk to my camera. They wanted to talk to me. And so I said, okay, I'll be the glue. I'll be your passport, you know, to the world between these other cultures. I never wanted to be an environmentalist or an activist. I just thought, okay, I love the ocean. And I can't surf or swim in the ocean if a plastic bag suffocates me every day. So what's the obvious thing to do? Well, let's protect our world waters. I was just in Bhutan trekking in one of the most remote areas in the world, and it was covered in plastic pollution. And I'm like, I don't want to explore these incredible forests and have to come across this. So I think you protect what you love. And if you see it, you believe it. And that's what my goal has been, is to show what's happening out of sight and out of mind.
I agree. I stumbled on the whole environmental thing too, more or less by mistake. I don't think anyone really sets out to be an environmentalist. It's not like a career choice, right, as much as one where you have to like stumble upon it and acquire a level of responsibility.
You've done that as well in such an incredible way. Like, I remember seeing the mermaid that you did with all the plastic, and it's just how many millions and millions of people around the world saw that. And that art, that education through, I don't know, really entertainment, but education through beauty, through wow factor. Everybody can use their own voice. You know what I mean? That's how you use your voice. And I think that's important when people say, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, what do you do? If you're a lawyer, maybe you can help with causes that need good laws behind them. If you're an artist, you can create art to make impact. If you're a tree trimmer, well, go out and use environmental ways to cut the trees or to fertilize the trees. Everybody can take their part. It doesn't have to be what the other person does.
Absolutely. So much of it is about starting where you are, right? There's always somewhere you would rather be or some skills you would rather have, but you have to figure out where you can start from. And it turns out that you can do so much. As an example, I think if you work in a company, you can figure out like what your company is doing with the trash of the cafeteria. It's something very simple, but it can have monumental impact when spread over time and so on and so forth.
And you might say, why, right? Like, why should I care about the ocean? I live in the middle of Minnesota. I have 3 kids. I'm a single mom. I don't even have time to think about that. I can't even pay for what I'm doing right now. And that I totally get. But at the same time, buying plastic water bottles every day costs a lot. At the same time, over 50% of our oxygen comes from the ocean. So we all need to breathe, right? It's not just about if you live next to the ocean. The oceans regulate our global climates and weather patterns. Over 2/3 of the world is dependent on the ocean for a food source. There's so many important things that come along with protecting the ocean. And I think you asked me what was the big catalyst for wanting to, quote, protect our oceans or become more of a education through entertainer rather than just an entertainer. This is going to be really funny and elephant in the room, but literally surviving naked on an island for a month changed my whole life. I was the first to go on Naked and Afraid, which is a Discovery Channel show. For those who don't know about it, it's basically like the Everest of survival challenges. So they put a man and a woman, strangers, in one of the most uninhabitable places on earth for almost a month with nothing, no clothing. And it's not a sensational show. It's a survival show. And it's really gnarly. And we almost died. And so I couldn't wait. I was so excited to put my ancient tribal survival skills to the test. And I got there and I started weaving fishnets and baskets and all these things. And every time I'd cast them in the ocean to try to catch fish, all I'd catch is plastic. And so this just changed my whole world because I started watching the patterns of all these plastics wash ashore. We're in the middle of the Indian Ocean near the equator, in the Maldives, and it was like 122 degrees. I'm roasting my naked buns off, and I am just overwhelmingly devastated by how plastic is destroying the nature that I need to survive. And so it was such a microcosm to me of what's going to happen on a greater scale. And these plastics had labels from all over the world. It wasn't just the Maldives. And so that's what really hit me when I went, oh no, it's not one person's problem. It's everyone's problem. And I think only about 9% of plastic worldwide is recycled that every year. That's what? That's just, it's mind blowing. And so recycling isn't even the answer. But that kind of got me on my camel and made me want to ride off into the world of talk shows and the press to use my voice as a voice of the oceans. And I was honored to be able to go on press tours afterward. And instead of, oh, did you guys sleep together? I'm like, have you heard about our ocean plastic crisis? And you know how you use your art and you use your voice for good. And so I shifted my mission and used whatever platform I could get to do good, but keeping that fun positivity, because I think that positivity creates positive change. And that's my mission.
And along the way, as your adventures has grown and evolved and your campaigns have gotten a little bit more focused, how did you reconcile with the scope of the problem? I think so many people just see the problem. They're like, oh my gosh, it's such a big problem. There's nothing I can do. But you've been pretty active in participating in some very specific legislation that has come to pass. So what is the process for an artist to collaborate with, say, a policymaker or a government official or something along those lines?
What's interesting is it actually happened the opposite way for me, where I would literally go, holy moly, it just rained in Los Angeles. The one part of the LA River, a channel that goes into Marina Del Rey, flooded, bringing down all of this plastic from all over the city. Someone calls me and says, do you have your surfboard? Of course, I'm there in a wink of an eye because I happen to be passing through. And before I know it, I'm paddling through some of the most disgusting trash and taking one for the team literally to show what is happening. And because that video went so viral, I think it got 4 or 5 million views like overnight. And I knew that the bag ban was coming up in California to vote to ban the bags. I knew that I wanted to make impact and show it was happening, but I had no idea. I just thought, okay, this is important. Let's show it. And then I got feedback from government people that my video had inspired people to vote to ban the plastic bag. And of course, I didn't do it single-handedly, but they said that was a tipping point. So that's just, that blew my mind. So it's me just going, oh my gosh, there's Trash Island in the Maldives. I want to try to get back there after Naked and Afraid. I want to show what's really happening out of sight, out of mind. It goes viral organically because hopefully I told a good story. I made a film about it. And the images are just, they speak for themselves. And because of that, either people come to me and say, how do I help? Which is what happened in that case. And then I just went back with the U.S. State Department where we were installing programs to help start models for the rest of the world that we can clean this up. So I think that basically what my moral of the story is, so instead of calling up a government official and being like, how can I help? I go, oh my gosh, big problem, document it, get it out there, and see what waves of change can be made after that and hope that people, you know, are listening. Like, how do you do it? Like, how do you make something visually stimulating and exciting to the point, if that's your calling, if that's your thing, to the point where people want to hop on board, pun intended, hop on right, surfboard right. and make a change.
you basically have the same strategy as an investigative journalist. So somebody who yeah. discovers something that hasn't yet been discovered, and then you are creating the tools for other people to talk about it, to connect with people in a way that they'll pay attention to it. So I think like the brilliance of going into the LA River and taking out your surfboard and going there, it's like the kind of thing that no one would ever want to approach with a 10-foot pole. They might observe it and not say anything. I think actually that's one of the things that I find nobody really knows that every single time it rains in a city, the wastewater treatment centers don't process anything. It goes straight into the river. So anything on the streets, anything that's lying around just washes straight in.
And to the ocean.
Yeah, straight into the ocean, basically. Yeah. And there's this tendency to always look across the world and say, oh, it's not my problem. It's not happening here. But there is still so much that can be done that's really closer. But over time, at least this is something I've noticed in the work that I've done, because I think we have similar strategies in that we try to create something that's visually compelling, that's a great story, but the mediums and the platforms are changing. And it used to be easier to make things go viral. You were rewarded for creating good content because the good things would get picked up. These days, it's become a lot more algorithmic. So how have you adapted your strategies to touch people's hearts in this new, more algorithmic-driven ecosystem?
I wrote a book. No, the book is pretty amazing. I feel like we're going this cycle right now. We're going to hit this critical mass where everybody's going to be so screen fatigued that hopefully they're going to go back to reading. And look how many people are going back to nature right now. It's unbelievable. in a way, it's such a blessing. I wish it didn't come at the cost of a pandemic. And I really feel for everyone around the world that's suffering. God, I've been on a emotional and crazy roller coaster too. Just because we're in Hawaii doesn't mean we just went on lockdown again here and they closed everything. So I think everybody's dealing with this in a different way and struggling in a different way. But I think you can't think algorithms. You have to think story. And you also have to think that if you're following your purpose and it's working, I don't know if you want to say it's karma or manifestation or magic. I was literally raised in these cultures to believe in the magic. Do I have a hard time trusting it sometimes? Of course. I don't wake up every day. I'm going to get exactly what I want if I wish and pray for it, like tinkerbelling around. But I do think that you have to at somewhat trust, like, what is the probability that I would launch a book that would help homeschoolers the day the world goes into homeschooling? And it's me shifting my perspective. So maybe you need to shift to a little more positive perspective. And I don't know. I can't get stuck on like algorithms and thinking that way. I just have to keep, I guess, moving forward. And it's literally like surfing, right? You ride the wave and you see where you end up. And sometimes you eat bleep. And then sometimes you get the ride of your life. Sometimes you end up underwater. Sometimes you get reef kisses.
But then one of the waves that you've been riding of late, beyond the book, is TikTok. In the last 6 months, you've gone from zero to half a million followers. And now I'm asking you, what was your strategy? And you're just like, yeah, you know, I just believe in what I do. But like, there has to be a little bit more into that, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. When you say, okay, so this is me for you. I work 24/7 all day long. But that work made me different to people. I, for those who actually know me on a daily basis in a physical mode, again, the work might be different. I might be struggling up a jungle trying to carry a ridiculous amount of equipment to document some wise chief because I want to have it, but I want to share that wisdom. But it is the most stressful, exhausting, intense thing, literally single-handedly, of course, with people like Sarah Lee and Mark Tipple and the amazing photographers that have helped around the world, a lot of them volunteer just because everything's been a not-for-profit. Like, I offer these films for free. So we'd be staying on the floor of mud brick huts in the middle of nowhere or eating Cliff Bars 24/7 because they were kind enough to send us something. It's so not glamorous and it's so not easy. And so I laugh when sometimes people look at my Instagram, oh, you just get to frolic the world in your pink bikini and it's so awesome. And I'm like, do you want me to show you every day like how stressful it is? But I think that stress, there's good stress and there's bad stress. There's like motivational stress. Like, I love getting stressed about, get to go underwater today. I'm going to document this reef. But editing, the bane of my existence literally is editing. And so what happened for me with TikTok is somebody said, oh, you got to go on there. That's where the kids are. You'd be such an inspiration, a role model. I'm like, no, this is crazy. I'm not going to keep, you know, fueling this social media beast and machine. But I've had decades of films that I've made and they're on YouTube and they're for free. And yeah, I've gone viral, but not that viral, not to the point where enough people have seen them. And I've worked my bananas off. So I just started posting my content. I started cutting things up and staying up to the wee hours of the night and just saying, okay, this would inspire a kid. This would help. This would, let's put this on there. Let's go to this adventure. Let's tell this story and doing it. You have to put in the work and the hours. But do I have a strategy? No, I think I just go, these are the stories that I want to share. This is the content that I have. And then to see kids coming to me, my parents are going through a divorce. I didn't want to even be on this planet anymore. And then I saw this TikTok or I read your book and realized that there's these adventures I could still have and these people that would be my friends and this magic that exists and a cause that I could take up, a purpose that I could have. I just, it really blows my mind. So I think that you have to try something. And if you're on the right track, then, you know, you can somehow flourish in it. You have to find the platform for you, if that makes sense.
The flip side of the coin is something that many people don't see. I think becoming a YouTuber is the number one profession that kids aspire for right now.
Really? Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I think there was a study done. And it's like, but why? What kind of life are you looking to have? And more importantly, what would you do with all of those views? What I really like about you, it's clearly you derive energy from this feedback loop that you're getting, right? Like, you're creating this for a very specific reason, a very specific purpose, and that gets you through the hard times. And I just feel like kids, especially, they don't take the time to think about, it's not just the profession, it's the lifestyle. And what does that lifestyle actually entail?
Yeah, it's glamorized.
Oh, yeah. It's always definitely glamorized. But in your case, what has the day-to-day been like COVID times compared to when you were like out and about? What were the two lives like?
Let's see. My business is adventuring. My life is adventuring. My passion is adventuring. And now an adventure is going from the kitchen to the living room. It's a big adventure. Sometimes even to the hammock or to my bedroom. For me, it's been interesting because we live literally in an off-the-grid kind of treehouse type place that is a retreat center on the ocean, you know, in Hawaii. And usually when there's people there, I'm playing musical beds because it's a place where people come to experience. And so it's actually been very special for us because I've gotten to have a room for the first time in my life that I could call my own. We can go use the kitchen without feeling like we have to. And it's what we love, sharing it with people. It's not like it's a chore to have to cook for people or share organic foods but it's interesting where my parents, they're 70s and they're going. They are going. I'm like, where are you guys? And they're climbing some crazy peak or they're hosting a yoga adventure or they're wild. I don't even know how they do it. Big flip-flops to fill for sure. But it's been an interesting time of just like stopping for a minute and reevaluating and getting to say, okay, what is the next step? My mom has gone from not even being able to like know what a button is to now have a Zoom class that people from all over the world are joining that she teaches from the yoga room at our jungle lodge. And so it's pretty special to see humans adapt. On top of that, we're in the middle of nowhere on an island, isolated, and trade routes were getting cut off. It was spooky at first. But I also think that it's going to show how much we need to learn to live sustainably and the value of those people that know that. When the toilet paper thing was hitting, everybody was like, oh my God, like, what happens? Do you know the kind of leaves we should use in case we run out of toilet paper? And I'm like, yeah, actually I do. But this is hilarious that we're getting to this point of really depending upon the people that I don't know how to say this. Like, success in many people's minds is the big houses, the big money, the big work. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's the most valuable at a time like this, maybe. So I think there's a shift happening of what do we value? And if somebody said to you right now, I'm going to give you 3 months, I'm going to give you 4 months where I'm going to take away your work, take away everything you've worked for. I'm going to totally shift up your life and say, okay, you can either start anew or you can figure out what you want to do. What would you do? So I know it's painful and I know there's suffering, but you can also try to see it as a gift of, I don't know, that restart button, right, on the computer and just trying to maybe do something you've never done before and shift it. And like TikTok, I would have never gotten on TikTok if it wasn't for a global pandemic. I wouldn't have even thought about it. I'm traveling, I'm helping the State Department in the Maldives and doing these big projects and thinking, wow, I finally made it. I'm going to make legislation. And now I'm like doing selfies on TikTok to kids all over the world. But how amazing is that I've been able to influence young children that during this time wouldn't maybe have that support or that inspiration. And you just have to shift, I think, your perspective a little bit and then sometimes just cry because that helps. Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. So speaking of success, then, what is your definition of success?
It's funny. I have to relate this back to you because never in a million, I don't know if anybody will ever know this story unless I tell it right now, but this is so funny. I find it wildly hilarious and insanely magical. And if you don't believe in manifestation, then you might after this. But I literally, since I was tiny, wanted to have my own TV show. And it wasn't in the sense like I wanted to be famous. I'd be trekking in the wild Himalayas. I'd get on an airplane and I'd see a Disney movie or I'd see TV in an airport. And I'd say, oh, wow, those people have the power to make change. Like, people listen to them. Like, you see the Britney Spears and the Justin Biebers and the Miley Cyruses and the role models that were around as I was growing up. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, everybody listens to them. What if they said, hey, let's protect the rice crops or let's not use plastic? Then maybe people would listen. So in my mind, I related that to success is having a TV show, a book, something where you can have a platform to then tell people about these things. I learned real fast that Hollyweird, it's everything you always hear about it. It's wild. It's not what I had dreamed of growing up in terms of being able to go in and have that platform. I did have, quote, success. I didn't get paid Naked and Afraid. It was more, I got the platform and I started doing things with that. But I was like, okay, this is it. This is going to be it. I'm going to get a show. I'm going to get to do this. And every time it was just so strange, like just the things they'd either want to make out of it, we have to add this, so we have to do that, and we have to make it this way. And you're just like, that's not going to help anything. So basically, I finally was getting so fed up with just trying to infiltrate the media in a good way that I thought, okay, what's been my biggest dream? I was in the shower one day and I was just crying and feeling my inner child of, I just grew up wanting to be a princess. Like, I'd watch those Disney movies and I just wanted to be Belle. I was like, I want to be a princess. I want to go into the unknown and do something different. And so I thought, wait, why couldn't I do that? So I literally started making a princess dress. And I called a friend in France and I said, can I come stay with you? I started researching and I found out that Beauty and the Beast is a true story. I had no idea. I couldn't believe it. And then I called you and I said, hey, do you want to come to France? I want to do like a recreation of Beauty and the Beast. I had really no idea at that time. I was just like flowing with it. And you said yes. And so we started planning things and then something came up for you. But because of that initial phone call where you didn't think I was absolutely loony, I was like, oh man, if he thinks this is going to be good, then like I'm on. So I took that inspiration and I set off there, but of course you're not going to let me down. So you had introduced me to the photographer that ended up coming with me. And very long story short, we ended up making this, I think it's a pretty awesome film, especially for the young ones about the true story of Beauty and the Beast. I put it up. It went pretty viral. And that's how Ripley's, believe it or not, ended up contacting me to make the book because they saw this tale and it was just so believe it or not that they said, God, what can we do together? This is so awesome. So you never know that when you're crying in a shower thinking like the world's coming to an end and I just want to run off and be a princess, that if you feel that inner passion, that inner child, it can lead to success. Because sometimes I think there's this pressure that you have to be successful by doing this or by doing that. And so for me, I found that if I tune into what I really want, even though if it's absolutely insane, then it can happen.
It's so fun. I love how sometimes the unexpected dots of like randomness actually connect together to make sense at some point. And so like maybe the most important thing is really to just follow your curiosity, right? Because if you lose the drive to experiment and to play and to fail and to learn, then nothing else will ever happen. Because then you'll just be like trapped and wallowing in misery. So
yep.
I think there's something to be said about that. In the work that you do, so just now as I was listening to you talk about like TikTok and the feedback that you're getting, how do you measure impact? Like how do you know when you've been successful? And when does that sort of successful impact become enough?
Well, I always thought you had to be in person to be successful and impactful. I remember when I was little, I'd watch movies and different things and I'd want to be Belle or I'd want to be that. But I finally saw my first theater production and it was, I think, Annie or maybe The Wizard of Oz. And I was mesmerized. It was some local theater production somewhere. And I remember afterwards just like wanting to just hug her. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. And so that I wanted to translate into going to these schools and being that real life individual because everyone's online and things are just so quick. So that was my plan for this book, was to go out and be able to measure the impact by seeing eye to eye. And I mean, not necessarily you can measure, you don't know what's going to happen when they go home. But I feel like when you're in person, and there's that actual human, it's like going to a concert, you remember that more than just turning on your music. There's that whole thing of like, act local, think global. I think that's a huge thing right now. And as cheesy as it sounds, it's super important. So I was out surfing this morning, because it's literally the only thing we can do here in Hawaii. And there's this little girl that I've always seen surfing, and she's the cutest thing. And her dad had gotten her this like big foamy board to learn on. And it's been important because it's scary when you're learning to surf and you're little and you might bump into people. And so he wanted her to have kind of the safety of the foam board. But now it's 2 years later and she's still really little, but she's killing it. She's dropping in with this foam board that she could barely hold on to, and she's doing amazing. And I heard her being like, but dad, I really want a real surfboard. I really want a real surfboard. Oh, I'm going to get choked up like thinking about it right now. And so I paddled over to the dad and I said, you know what? I still have my very first pink surfboard. And I just found it serendipitously because of COVID. I was cleaning out the shed and there's the very first pink surfboard. And I was thinking like, what do I do with this? I can't sell it. That doesn't feel right. And what am I going to, I don't need to keep more stuff because I travel. And so now I'm going to give it to her tomorrow and it's going to make her whole week. I hope, who knows, but maybe she'll remember. And just that one little girl if that's what you do, that's important, right? I think to me, that feels good. So I don't really know the answer to that. I think it has to be dependent on what you feel, but I can say that no matter who I meet, wealthy, poor, passionate, depressed, a bigger is never enough. It's never enough. Everybody always wants more, to do more, to go bigger, to do different. And so I think you just have to do good. Like, I know it sounds so cheesy, but like, I think that the Hawaiians had it right. It's if you live aloha and you pass that on and you try to just do good, it can't not have good ripple effects. And if someone's having a bad day and they're mean to you, you don't know what they're going through. So don't keep spreading that. Like, that doesn't help anything. So I don't know. I guess the measure of impact would be how much aloha you're spreading on a daily basis.
So it's really interesting hearing you talk, because you're basically, like you were saying earlier, you're like Tinkerbell. You just have this really simple, go lucky in the best of ways. Just be the best version of who you possibly can be. Try to do good in the world. Follow your curiosity, follow your passion, and great things will happen. That's essentially this very broad ethos. But then how do you decide what to do next? Mm-hmm. Life is really long. You have 70 years left, maybe more.
I hope
in your life to live. Who knows? And so where do you see yourself in 10 years? And how do you align yourself to that mountain? So now I've created a book. It's inspiring girls around the world to pursue what they care about and to see themselves represented there.
Yeah.
But then what happens next? Like, where do you go? And if you don't have any other metric than the smiles that you generate on a day-to-day basis, how do you make those critical decisions?
It's interesting. I've never been a person of like, I'm going to be here in 10 years. I'm going to be there in 20 years. I literally was homeschooled in a tent. People didn't even know if I'd be able to like spell my own name. And I graduated summa cum laude from UC Berkeley and USC Film School after being homeschooled my whole life. And that was never a plan. But honestly, I don't know if you found this, and it's hard to explain, and maybe unless you travel a lot, but time kind of shortens. I don't even know quite how to describe it, because things will happen. If you're on your path and you're doing things and you keep your ears and eyes open and you're kind to people, things do happen. They never don't happen. You never really know what's going to happen when you leave the house and if you talk to people. And that's my theory in life. I literally am like this global walking, I'm going to meet someone today and what's going to happen. For example, I was invited to speak at the World Economic Forum after the Maldives film and the trash and everything was going viral and happening. And that was a result, of course, of me just following and saying, I want to show what's happening. And then I got contacted. And while I was there, there was some random people and they said, there's water underneath Paris in these catacombs. And most people think this is like the largest grave on earth, and it is, but there's a whole nother portion of it that has this fresh water that we also want to have protected. And maybe we could take you down there and show you, and you have your pink surfboard, which is an emblem of protecting it. And let's document. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. Before I know it, it's like the top news story of the year. It was also slightly twisted into girl with pink surfboard tramples on bones, which was not at all the intention. And we almost died. It flooded outside. And we had to go through these passages to get out. And suddenly I'm like seeing human bones, and it was full Indiana Jones. But I think things happen like that, where I know that people have different ways of thinking. Some people have to write things down and set goals. Sometimes things just wildly happen. I was in the water preparing for Naked and Afraid. I paddled out surfing. I've never been so frustrated in my life. I could not figure out how to make fire for the life of me. You use a match, you use a lighter, you take it on your camping trip. I don't sit there with sticks like rubbing them together. And suddenly I have to be this professional survivalist. I paddle out. I'm frustrated as all heck. There's this girl next to me I've never seen in the lineup. And she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, oh God, I just don't want to talk to people right now. What? And I'm like, no, I can't make fire. And then I was like, oh, that sounded so stupid. Why did I just say that? Turns out she's one of the most top professional survivalists in the world. Before I know it, we're in our bikinis in the parking lot at the surf break, rubbing things together, made fire. She helped me that entire week. And if it wasn't for her serendipitously being there in the lineup, I might not have made it through Naked and Afraid. And then she happens to live in the Great Barrier Rainforest. She survived with nothing but a rowboat and a cat for a year and a half in British Columbia. I got to go up there, go into the Great Barrier Rainforest, make a whole film about that adventure and protecting the forest and the bears. And it's the last climactic chapter in my book right now. So my answer would be, this is very hard to explain, but everyone is born with a purpose, and you have to figure out what that purpose is. And if you don't know what that purpose is, you just need to start doing and talking to people and trying things and seeing what works. Like you said, don't be afraid to fail. Just try it. My parents told me one day, and this is something that will always stick with me, and take it for what it's worth, but we were traveling and I was little, and a lot of people would be like, oh my gosh, you're a family. How do you afford to travel? How do you afford to do this? And you're building a place in Hawaii on the ocean. And they looked at, I said, Mom, how do we afford it? And she goes, oh, we have a trust fund. And I said, what? What's a trust fund? And she said, oh, we trust the funds will be there. And I always thought that was funny play on words. And that's just been their philosophy in life, where if you think back, have you ever really died? Something's always happened to guide you. Has there ever been a moment where you can think of where something hasn't happened to propel you to the next place?
Yeah, that's a great lesson. And one of the things that I have also learned is that we spend all our life working to earn money so that we can spend it on the things that we really want to do. But what if you can just get rid of that like middle step of earning the money? If you can actually just find people and find out what they love and what they're passionate about and exchange that or offer that or experience it together, then you've just circumvented the need for money. And that's what I hear in the way you've approached life. So that
isn't that what you do a lot with your projects as well? Like you all come together?
Yeah, I think it comes out of necessity. So it's the same thing, right? You don't have the funds to go hire anyone. So what do? You have to create something compelling enough that will give people a reason to come. And people are inherently selfish, not in the bad way, just we have to look out for ourselves. And so when you want to do something, it's not just saying, I want to do X, but also about saying, how can I allow someone else to have a really great experience so that I can do X? So I always factor in the other person in the process of thinking. I'm a little bit strategic about it.
Because you'll have people that they might want to do art or set design, or they might want to do makeup, and you're giving them this incredible platform then to do that.
Yeah, people are either, they're there for the experience, they're for the exposure, they're there for the chance to meet a new community. They're, like, people have all sorts of different reasons. But I think when you think about others in that way, what you try to do, one, you speak differently. You don't say, hey, come help me on my thing. You start off by trying to understand them first, understand what they care about, what they're curious about, and how what you're looking for can provide that to them. So I'm always like hunting for these intersectionalities. And
I'm looking for an editor. Anybody out there want to help? I can't keep up. Like these kids on TikTok, they could watch things all day. I'm just like, oh my Lord, I'm not just going to throw up anything. I want to edit good stories. And that becomes a lot to handle when you're just, you know, trying to stay true. So yeah, I'm definitely on the search. I think editing is the one thing that's just a lot. It's a lot for me. But for the right people who love it, and who are really quick at it.
Yeah, and your videos on TikTok are getting tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views every single time. Yeah. So it's they're getting seen by people, which is really cool. When, as I speak to you, it's really interesting because you basically live life like a surfer. You have this sort of the openness, like you can't surf unless there's waves. And so there's almost this sort of...
It's a good way to put it.
There's this sort of waiting for the waves to come, but you're observing, you're ready when it's there, you run out and you wait to catch the wave. And for me, I've never been like that. I've always been this sort of on the opposite end. Maybe it's just because I'm a dude and it's always been about like controlling the situation or like, figuring something out, very tactical and strategic about it, except none of that has been an option during this time of COVID. And so I've reverted back similar to what you're doing in that I am just trying to create systems that will position me better for a future that I may or may not be interested in. So I also don't have necessarily a 5 or 10 year plan, but I'm trying to figure out what kind of systems can you put in place in this moment in time that will serve you in the future. So you mentioned right now that you're looking for an editor and this is for TikTok, but like, how did you go about building like your first TV show? I mean, like it's such a big, complicated thing. And many people want a show or want to have a channel or whatever. Like, what do you think are the steps necessary to do that? Or what should they prepare for? Or what should they be preparing for?
I did it the really difficult way. And maybe I would be bigger right now, so to say, or quote, more successful if I had followed other routes with things, or maybe not. It's so hard to say, but I literally didn't have a method to the madness. I just kept going and creating and going and creating and doing everything that I could to do that. But I also think there's an importance in having a plan. There's two sides to things. So how you say like, I'm a surfer. Okay, yes, I take what's coming to me and I jump on things that I think. My dad was a photographer. There's very important ways to set up a shot, and you got to get up at 4 a.m. and you have to have certain angles. And I don't just roll off the couch and shoot something. Everything has to be planned out to the T to make something work. And safety. I paddled up to an active volcano in Hawaii. Did I just go, oh, I'm just going to grab my surfboard and paddle up to that? No, I wasn't doing like a YouTube stunt. This was with like one of the most powerful Hawaiian families, and we did the blessings, and we took an 8-hour boat ride, and we tested waters, and we planned things, and we had for, you know, it's growing up in Indonesia, I always call it like the masters of illusion. And I'm not saying what I'm doing is an illusion or is wrong, but if you go to Bali, you'll see like these temple ceremonies or these incredible things pop up in a matter of a day. And it's unbelievable, or a fire dance. And it's just, whoa, and it's real and it's happening. But it's also because a village came together dedicated to something, and they made this magical manifestation happen because they believe in these spirits and they believe that this kind of needs to happen. And so again, tinkerbelling, if you believe in a project like you did, where some people say, okay, wow, that's a pretty mermaid in plastic bottles, but they have no idea what went on behind the scenes. So when I get dedicated to something, I go like, hardcore. You have to just go for it and never take no as an answer, but be kind about it and keep going. But if you hit too many roadblocks, then you also have to take that as a sign of, well, I need to take a different angle, or need to sit back and see what I'm missing because I'm so focused on this. So be passionate. It's really hard. It's not going to be easy. GoPro cameras took 10 years in a garage to create, but they were an overnight sensation. You have to work at it and you have to go. And maybe I need to talk about that process more, but I also don't want to bum people out every day by like how much work it is. It's a lot.
Yeah, there's so much like the tip of the iceberg is what released into the world, but the rest is really where the work lies. I do find that the whole like pursue your passion thing is a little bit hard to follow in the sense that if you knew what your passion was, then you wouldn't have a problem pursuing it because right. You know what it was. But if you don't know what your passion is, then it becomes a little bit more gray. And I think for me, it's always been that grayness because I get bored easily and my passion, quote unquote, sort of changes, right? Like photography is a tool. And initially it was about connecting with people by like inspiring people, pursue something that you're curious about. You can use photography to travel. You can use it as a collaborative tool, but then it became about impact. And then it wasn't about photography anymore. It became more about installations. It became more about campaigns. And then now there's no more installations and there's no more campaigns. So what is the art, right? And like, what is the alignment? And I had one of the guests come on board, I think it was episode 14, who was saying like, you can also develop a portfolio of purpose. And I thought that was a really interesting analogy. Because purpose comes in many shapes and forms. There's health, like you mentioned, there's family. There is the impact that you want to have on the world. There's like your personal selfish ego desires. They all shape who we are. And there's not always one specific direction. And yeah, maybe it's not always clear, but.
It's not always clear. But everything I go back to is my parents and not like you were born into this life. Yeah, I was born into this life, but we had no funds to our name. Everything I've done, I've earned and done on my own. My dad isn't traveling the world with a pink surfboard trying to save the world from plastic. He's doing his own thing. However, this one thing I will say, and this again just sounds cheesy, but having someone to gauge off of, to re-inspire you, to hold you accountable, to bounce things off of, who is that partner in crime? Like I had Sarah Lee for what, years? And until I met her, I'm trying to do this on my own. And then she, as a photographer, was able to help put what's up here into visual, right? Then most of the pictures in this book are either hers or my dad. So it's like, maybe, and again, I'm not necessarily like religious or I believe in nature, but you have to stay, we're humans. We have to stay connected. Go talk to a friend. That to me is inspiration, and find that one person who knows you that can check you. When I said I'm going to get a princess dress and go to France, most parents would have been like, you're out of your mind. What are you doing? And my dad was like, you should go to the Canary Islands too, because that's where the beast was born. And he's on there like researching with me. And before I know it, I kid you not, man, I'm in France and I get an email when we started talking about the Canary Islands that said, hi, Allison, we own a place in the Canary Islands. We'd like to have you over here to check out our surf camp. We can only fly you from France. There's no chance you'd be there. Is there? What? So if you're on the right track, I know I keep saying this, but you have to believe in the magic and then look to those people who can help point you in the passion direction. The one thing my mom always does when somebody doesn't know what their passion is, and this is like a physical thing you can do, and I can't believe I'm saying this because to me it seems so hippy dippy and wild, but it works, is stand there right now and figure out in your head. So say you want to be an artist and your family's saying, no, that's not the right way. Stand there and see which way your body leans. And this seems insane, but just see which way your body leans. Does it lean forward or does it lean backwards? And you are going to feel that. And I know it's nuts, but if you're leaning forward, there's probably a pretty good chance that you should keep going in that direction because somehow your psyche or whatever the energy is around it knows. And so sometimes I'll do that kind of check. And maybe it's your own self pushing yourself into it. But if you have that innate ability to keep moving forward and to push yourself into it, then you'll probably be able to succeed. But yeah, find that mentor, keep that passion, and check yourself as you go.
Very good. Very good. Heading towards a close here, but when you are this really like happy, positive person, over the last 3 years, 4 years that you've been working on this ocean plastics problem, mm-hmm. the amount of plastic consumed in the world has only increased and the amount of awareness mm-hmm. has equally increased. But the progress that needs to happen in order to get us to where we need to get to sometimes feels really far away. How do you stay positive and inspired? And what do you see happening in your crusade over the next decade?
No matter where I've gone, from the depths of the sea to the top of the highest mountain to the poorest village to the richest city, I've found one commonality, and that is plastic pollution. But on top of that, the only way we are going to solve this issue is by coming together to find a solution. And you say, how are you always positive? In some funny sort of way, the catastrophe is going to cause global coming together, which is interesting, right? Because there's no way we're going to survive as a human race if we don't come together and work on these kind of things together. It's just not going to happen. So there's kind of two options. Either we come together and start to learn how we're going to do this all together, and that's going to be a beautiful thing that comes out of it. Or like one of these famous Nat Geo scientists I met said, the human race will be gone. The planet will probably be okay. It'll regenerate and it'll stick around because it's pretty resilient. But human beings will not. And so everybody says, oh, we want to save the planet. We want to save the planet. Planet's probably going to be fine. But I don't know if we're going to be around. And I got to go dive into these caves in Tulum in Mexico. And I was with these scientists and we were uncovering like the oldest humans in the Americas, like ice age skeletons. And they're doing these studies showing how climate change in a previous ice age wiped people off the map. And so it's not too far of a stone's throw when you dig up a dinosaur and realize that was part of one extinction and we're in another extinction period right now. Do we want to stick around as a human race or do we not? And that's just the big question. And the beauty is we'll have to come together to be able to do that.
So then if you had a microphone to the world and could invite everyone to do one thing, what would that thing be?
Ooh, chocolate's really good. I like eating chocolate. That always helps. Oh, what would that be if I had a microphone to the world? Oh my gosh, there's so many things that I would want to talk about. I think that, like I said, spreading aloha is important. Connection with your family, your ohana, your roots, and storytelling. And so for me, I think a lot of people say, I don't want to tell my story because it's not as interesting as yours. Until I was old enough to actually understand the life that I had, all I wanted was to get on a big yellow school bus and have homework and have a white picket fence and have a slumber party and have my dad go to work and come back with a briefcase. And so this to me was this mystical dream life out there. And so I think that it's really important that we all share our own stories because to someone else, they might be a dream, they might be inspirational, they might be what that person needs to learn about or hear about today. So instead of trying to be a celebrity or trying to be someone on social media, and I see this with all the TikTok trends, it's everyone's doing the same trends. What the hell? And I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I've never posted a trend because how is that bettering? I don't want to judge what people do. It's their thing, but we don't all need to look the same. We don't all need to be the same. There's two things to this. It doesn't matter what you look like, what race you are, what political party you are. If we don't have a planet, we're not going to have anything. So that's important that we start to come together to protect this place we call home, or we won't have a place to live. We won't have water to drink. So I would say my megaphone is that, come on, guys, come together. Beatles must have had it right. We have to tell our stories and appreciate other stories. It's so important. It's so important.
Thank you so much for that. Now, if people want to come and follow your story and maybe send the little videos and the adventures that you've made to their nieces or their nephews or their kids. Where should they do that? How should they follow you? How do they find you?
Find me, dive into Allison's Adventures anywhere. It's 1LALISONS adventures.com. You can go on my YouTube, Allison Adventures, Twitter, Allison Adventure, Instagram, Allison's Adventures, TikTok, Allison's Adventures. If you Google chick with pink surfboard saving the world, you probably can't miss me. I think that if we really do all hop on board to make waves of change and to share, like people say, what can we do aside from using reusable products or a reusable straw or reusable water bottle or trying to cut down on lights that we turn on or ride a bike to work instead of a car, or I guess just stay home as we all are right now. In addition to that, we can share content that's important. It's really easy to click a mouse. So if you want to go on and look up my film on Trash Island in the Maldives, or it doesn't even just have to be my content, but at least I know it's not fake news. You can go on there and share what I'm doing, and it would mean the world to me. And I think it would mean the world to the world because it'll be around longer. And the cool thing is that I'm not Dora the Explorer. I'm not Indiana Jones. I'm me and I'm real. And I hope to be able to communicate with kids. I do my best to reply and to be a little Tinkerbell of inspiration to people in real life.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. That was great.
Lots of aloha.
Alrighty, there you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Allison. If you have children, if you have a niece, if you have a nephew, or if you yourself just love her energy and her vibe, I highly recommend you go follow her on TikTok. And she does a really good job of cutting down all those archival YouTube videos and putting them into digestible TikTok formats that is more suited to today's ecosystem. So if that interests you, and if you are actually looking to dive deeper, well then of course there is her book, Allison's Adventures, Passport to the World, that just came out on Ripley's Believe It or Not. So you can find that on her website, allisonsadventures.com. As always, if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to see a summary or have some free shareable graphics, head over to impacteverywhere.org. Drop me a line if you have any comments, criticisms, questions. It's always welcome. I make this podcast for you, and it's always helpful to know where you land and what you care about. Next week, we bring on board Sarah Milne from the organization As You Sow. That's asyousow.org. After speaking to Charlie Kleissner last week, I really wanted to dive a little bit deeper into this idea of money and impact. And Sarah's organization actually focuses on using a technique called shareholder resolution to campaign for change within corporate environments. So obviously, I had to have her on the podcast. If that sounds interesting to you, make sure to tune in next week and stay inspired, because impact is everywhere.